about to feed him to the sharks right now.
Get him hyped right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is up.
Yeah.
Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it go. Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth.
That's
time on the mat. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know.
No.
But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.
Welcome to episode 13 of the BJJ Campaign Podcast. My name is Jeff Boone. I'm an A3, blue belt, one stripe.
This is Phil Kors, A2, white belt, four stripes.
Hi, this is Kaylin Huggins, A1, black belt.
This is CJ Murdoch, A1, black belt, never had any stripes.
Never any stripes. And also, you guys, I did see that on your page, right? Because you said, I believe the quote was, I like omoplatas and wearing my girlfriend's gi.
Yeah, I wear Kaylin's gi a lot. It's just usually her gis are cleaner and smell better than mine. So
who washes the gis? You wash the gis?
We have like a system at the house. Pretty much we meaning my brother and myself, cook basically all of the food. And Kaylin does most of the laundry. We alternate every once in a while, but for the most part, we cook. And she does the laundry.
Yeah.
That's a good system. I think you're getting the best of that one.
Yeah, we think so too. Because we got small laundry, so she doesn't have to wash too much at one time.
Laundry, yeah. Twice a day training.
Small washing machine, so just one or two at a time. But it goes all day long, I think. Yeah, the washing machine's running all day long.
Yeah.
So what is your guys' training schedule?
Morning time, most of the time, a drill session before morning class. Then take us
through that drill session. For the listeners out there, we trained at Top Martial Arts with Caitlin and CJ and Jay and all the crew, and it was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. And you guys did a lot of drilling, passing stuff, things like that. It was awesome and gave Phil and I some new exercises and drills to do, so that was really cool too. So take us through like a typical drilling session that you guys would be doing.
So if it's like a typical day throughout the week, like let's say not like the week after a tournament, because the week after a tournament is a little bit different. We tend to focus on the things we did wrong in the tournament rather than anything else. But for the most part, we like to drill like our techniques that we either A, really like to do, or B, techniques that we're really bad at. Like, Kaylin's known as a passer, so instead of spending a lot of her time passing, she might spend maybe a quarter of her time passing, and then maybe three quarters of the time working at guard. And we have, like, different times to keep it, like, a little bit more interesting, because sometimes when you just come in and do 5-minute switch every time, it can get boring. So sometimes we do one-on-one, sometimes we drill like it's like a power lift session. So we'll do like 5 reps and then take a break. The other partner will do 5 reps. So it really kind of depends on what our focus is for maybe the week or like maybe the month. Because I know Kaylin and I have probably been drilling almost the same stuff for, I mean, probably more than just 1 month. Maybe like 3 months, 4 months. In fact, I think maybe like the basic variations we've been drilling the same. You could almost say that we've been drilling the same thing for almost close to a year since we got here.
So would you say then like your A game is 25% and then your C game is 75% of what you're drilling? Is that kind of how you approach it?
Pretty much. I mean, it depends too.
I think Kaylin's C game is closely starting to become her favorite A game. Because card, I think, is a little bit easier than passing. I think she's starting to realize that.
Yeah.
But I think it really just kind of depends on what we're feeling. Sometimes, like, when we're really, really, really dead, we try to focus a little bit more on the stuff that we're already good at. Whereas, like, maybe if I'm really fresh, I'll spend a little bit more time trying to do things new. But I don't really ever spend a drill session learning new information. It's usually just reiterating what I already know.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of spend more time in, the actual classes that we do, like morning class or night class, to, like, maybe spend more time refining new techniques. Because if you're just doing it, like, say, Kaylin and I are here, like, trying to work a new technique, it can be hard because we're only drilling together. Whereas, like, when I'm trying to do something new with Jay here or Mitch, who teaches the morning class, they can really help me. So I try to avoid, like I said, doing new techniques on my own, because like I said, I think it's a little bit easier if somebody else is there. Plus, it's more time efficient. And let's be realistic, there's only a certain amount of time in the day. And we teach kids classes, so that takes a portion of our day. So a portion of our day has to be dedicated to kids classes. So we have to do as much as we can within the time limits or time constraints that we allow ourselves to.
Right, and that's a smart approach too, right? You don't want to be drilling something the wrong way. If it's not something that you you feel like you have a good grasp of, then you don't want to be drilling it because it might be give you the wrong muscle memory.
Yeah. Does that change much for competitions, or do you pretty much keep that same schedule all the time?
We kick it up just a little bit more for competition. Like for Nogi Worlds, I actually didn't teach much at all. My brother took over a predominant of the night classes that I teach. I usually teach Monday nights in Rock Hill and Wednesday nights here. But Josh took that over, so I was able to train a little bit more than I taught. But for the most part, if I'm not specifically game planning for a certain person, which I don't do too often unless I see like a specific weakness that I can exploit. But for the most part, I just kind of try to focus on my own game and building what I like to do or what I feel like is the most advantageous position. Because sometimes I don't actually drill stuff that I like to do. Like it's stuff that I feel like I need to learn because that's the way that like my weight class is going. Like I don't specifically enjoy inverting or barreling, which I do actually a lot more now that I understand it a lot more. But my sole purpose on learning it in the first place, because that's what people in my weight class did.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of like a backwards learning for me sometimes. Sometimes I don't like doing stuff like half guard, right? Mm. Like I hated half guard. And then a friend of mine introduced me to like the Lucas Leitch style, like coyote half guard. Now I really enjoy half guard. It's something that like, because I opened my mind a little bit more and like allowed myself to like learn these techniques, because every technique has an application, so you can't be so specific. Like, I can only do this or I can only do that. Like, you have to learn everything so you know how to defend everything. So.
Yeah. I'll definitely research my opponents and see what they're good at and then try to devise drills that kind of address the game they're going to throw at me or try to prepare myself, you know, like, if somebody I know is good at spider guard, then I'll try to drill spider guard defenses, passes from there. You know, the start, are they going to pull guard? Are they going to try takedowns? Like, I think about those things and kind of devise my drill plan according to that before competitions if I can. Kind of like, I guess, doing homework before a test.
Well, and two, I mean, you probably know much of your competition,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. It's a very small pool for the black belt ladies. We all, like, it doesn't take long for everybody to know each other.
Yeah. But. That's good and bad, right?
Yeah, it's good in that, like, I don't know, like, when I go against people I've competed against before, I feel like every time I meet them, I do a little better. Maybe not necessarily that day, but, like, when I meet them again, I'm like, oh, yeah, they're human. Like, this is what they felt like, and that ice is kind of broken, so I'm not, like, going in like, okay, this is this famous person.
And yeah. It's like Claudia Duvall, right?
Yeah, like, I went against Bia Mosqueda. It's funny, I went against her in the absolute as a purple belt in 2008. And then I went against her in the absolute as a black belt in 2016. And it was just really surreal, you know. But like, even though I had competed against her before, she had become so famous in that time.
Yeah,
so famous,
sure.
You know. So I think I just like psyched myself out for it, you know. But I think.
So you didn't carry that same type of principle over from purple belt. You're like, ah, she's human. I've been there.
Yeah,
before.
It was so. It had been so long.
Yeah.
You know, because it's funny. I remember when I was purple belt. Like, I didn't know who she was. She was just another purple belt.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's a little bit easier to be naive when you're a lower belt. I think now it's harder. I think being a lower belt now, like, I would hate to be a lower belt now. Like, to be a blue belt or a purple belt with like these like really top level competitors, like my friend Talis from Cicero Costa's school, he's a 18 and like, man, he's better than some black belts that I know, and he's still a blue belt. So like, to be a lower belt now, I think it's a lot harder than to a lower belt than when we were lower belts, because I think there was just so many less lower belts. And like, when we were purple belts, I was like, almost like we didn't really see that many purple belts. So when you competed against him, it wasn't as like, I guess that like people just weren't, like you said, they weren't as famous, or you didn't look at them as famous. And then now that everybody is a black belt, or they've been competing, or like whatever, I think you can, it's easier to put them on like a higher pedestal. And I think like taking them off the pedestal and realizing that like they're just regular people and you just need to train. And as long as you're training, you know, like there's not really much you can do other than either A, train harder, or B, train smarter. Or, I mean, I guess you could quit, but that's not the, that's not really the option.
No, right? Not really.
So,
and guys, so I mean, this is really helpful for our viewership. You know, I think most of it, you know, what we try to do is try to shorten the learning curve. You know, Phil, a white belt, myself, a blue belt, and we just, we're thirsty for knowledge, and we're thirsty for really getting as good as we can. Me, selfishly, because I'm 48 years old. I'm old. I was old when I started jiu-jitsu, and I want to get the most out of it. And so that's kind of why it's called the BJJ campaign, is that we're trying to bring our listeners along with us, which are predominantly white, blue belts, that sort of thing. So thank you for that.
So I was listening to one of the podcasts that you were on, Dirty White Belt, an older interview, and you had mentioned you sounded like you preferred training in the gi over no gi.
So I was like kind of coerced. Like it's like I didn't really have a choice, because the school that I was at never trained without the gi on.
Okay.
And he wouldn't really let me train without the gi on. Like if I wanted to do no gi training, I had to do it by myself. Like here for no gi worlds, like I came in to the gi classes, didn't wear my gi. Jay helped me out. Either he had people take their gi off, or like other people already knew, okay, this was like the little new no gi corner, this is the gi corner. And like I just never really had that. So like I was kind of forced to like the gi a lot more. And now that I have a lot more options, like no gi, and like I have a little bit more training partners no gi, like I kind of, it's funny because I like the gi for the guard better, and I like no gi for passing better.
Okay.
So it's like I almost like the opposites of the styles.
Yeah, that is.
It's much more difficult, I think, to play guard in no-gi than it is to play gi. I think you have a lot more grip options.
Yeah.
So I think I like the dynamics of the passing in no-gi more specifically, because I think it's harder for me to play more of like my style in no-gi, because people can disengage a little bit easier. People can kind of like use the space a lot less, like I don't want to say less effectively, but they can use it kind of to maybe eat some clock away, right? Like in my no-gi match, the guy was knee slicing, but he wasn't really knee slicing with an underhook. His knee slicing just to kind of make space to make a motion, right? And I kind of actually
did not stall.
Yeah, I kind of really like that aspect of no-gi, because one, it's kind of constantly moving, but two, like you're never gonna get a pass because you're like really holding the person down. A lot of times the pass come because either A, you're faster than the person, or B, you kind of trick them into going this way and you really went the other way. And I kind of like the puzzle aspect. And I think maybe just because I spent so much time not liking no-gi. And then, like now that I say that, I feel like it's kind of silly that I said back in the past that I didn't like no-gi, because I think it really was like my lack of knowledge that made me like or dislike no-gi.
Sure. Yeah.
That and Fulux are my favorite. And the more that I get into Fulux, they're still not my favorite. Like, I train Fulux a lot more than I used to, and they're still not one of my favorite things to do. And I think that's the only dislike that I have with no-gi, because I think Fulux are, like, the new Barambolo. You know what I mean? Everybody was doing Barambolo, like, a couple of years ago, and now everybody wants to be, like, Gary Tonin or Gordon Ryan.
Gary Tonin.
Yeah,
you had a match against him in 2014.
I did, man, and he was like I said, my leg lock knowledge was like next to nothing, and unfortunately, I had a coach that wasn't like super like into me winning competitions. He was more like for the whole of the school, so I didn't get any specific real information. Like, I didn't really have the knowledge in which to really attack him in a manner that I was could have. Or would have been able to win. Knowing everything that I know now, I would still love to compete against him again. Just maybe I would have thought about things a little bit differently. Because I think that maybe back then there was a chance. If I played a little bit different, now it would be much harder. Now the leg lock gap is a lot bigger. So I think having a match with him would be much more difficult. Maybe. But he does a lot more MMA now, so who knows?
Yeah. 2-0
now? Yeah, I think maybe 3-0. He's
right,
man.
That's right. He just had another match, didn't
Gary's really, really awesome. So, like, I think he's one of the more fun people to watch because he will go for it. And if he wins, he's excited. If he loses, he's excited. It doesn't really matter. And he never really makes excuses.
That's totally what I agree.
That's what I really like about him. So totally just being able to compete against him, like those anybody that's a big name like that, man, makes me a better grappler instantly after competing against him.
For sure.
That, and I've never been caught in that so little O guard footlock again. So, yeah.
See, so it always has its benefits.
Usually, I get caught in something and then I become obsessed with it. That's kind of like how I get caught. Like one of my friends caught me in a full foot sweep, and I got obsessed with foot sweeps for like a year and a half. And now I consider myself decent at them. Right? And before, I had really no foot sweep knowledge whatsoever.
Have you had any more MMA fights? I saw you had one.
I've only had one professional fight. I actually really was not too excited to try to find another fight because it's such a pain in the butt for me to find fights to begin with. It took me 2.5 years to make my pro debut, and I think I went through like 7 to maybe 12 opponents.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm
What, they just canceled?
You're just like, whatever. Maybe they signed up and then they didn't realize I was a black belt, or like, their coach thought maybe it wasn't a good idea, or like, because some people just get excited and they sign up for things and then like, oh wait, maybe like they couldn't do it because they have some. It's hard, man, to fight for like a really small amount of money. It's like, you like most of the time you're spending money, so like, it's hard. It's hard to start off, and like maybe people don't want to fight a black belt their first pro MMA fight, and like I'm only 1-0 as a pro, so there's only a certain amount of people that they can give me. And before that, I was 0-0 as a pro. So, like, there's only a certain amount. Like, they can't just give me some huge name right off the bat. So maybe if I make a name for myself in jiu-jitsu a little bit more, like, because I'm not, like, a big name or anything. In fact, I think Caitlin's a bigger name in jiu-jitsu than me. She's certainly higher ranked in the IBJJF system, and she's been competing in the IBJJF system for a lot longer, right? I've only been competing in IBJJF for a year. And if we're talking about jiu-jitsu, that's what people care about is IBJJF. Even though EBI is popular, even though some of these other tournaments are popular, they'll never be as popular as IBJJF. And I don't think there's really anything anybody's going to do to change that. So for me, got to play the game. If I want to be famous or a household name in jiu-jitsu, whatever you want to call it, I need to make a mark on the jiu-jitsu scene a little bit bigger than I have right now. So my focus is that. And honestly, I think like I could pick up like, with 2 months' notice, any time I could pick up a fight if I really, really was interested. So it's always something up in there.
Yeah, what caught my attention when you were talking about it is you mentioned you were doing it to improve your jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know? So I was wondering how you felt about that.
It's
afterwards.
Really funny because like MMA is really the only reason I kept doing jiu-jitsu. So when I was a blue belt turning into a purple belt, I was like thinking about fighting MMA, and then I was talking to my brother, and I was like, man, should we do this or whatever? And he's like, well, you said you would wait till your purple belt, so just wait till you get your purple belt, and then we'll talk about it. And then basically I got my purple belt, and he basically signed me up. He was like, all right, we're not going to fight MMA. We're going to have our first fight. I think I was 18, maybe 19 years old. And I was getting ready for my first fight, and I got injured, right? So my brother took the fight. And then we moved a little bit and, like, took some time off just, like, graduating high school and stuff like that, like, moving away for a little bit. And then we moved to Wilmington, and we had just started training, like, again, and my brother was like, okay, you're a purple belt now. Let's take an MMA fight. And basically just doing MMA is the reason why I kept doing jiu-jitsu, because it was, like, what scared me into training enough. Because I was like really lazy as a lower belt. I didn't really like to train so much. So I signed up for an MMA fight because I knew that the MMA fight would scare me into training. So it was like kind of like the only thing that kind of kept me into doing jiu-jitsu was like the fear of getting my butt kicked in an MMA fight.
You think you train harder now than you used to?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I was a purple belt, I fought a guy named Varen Webb, and it was a title fight. So it was five rounds, three minute rounds, but it was five rounds. So I know that guy was training like crazy, man. And I had a falling out with one of the gym owners that I was with the day after I signed the contract. So I signed a contract for an MMA fight, and I have a little bit of falling out with the gym that I was at. And man, I signed a contract, so what are you gonna do? You know what I mean? So I did what I could at like my house with my brother and a couple of friends, and I got my butt kicked like really, really bad. And I took a couple of days to kind of just like reevaluate what I wanted. And I talked to the owner of my job. I started letting them know that I was gonna take my 2 weeks notice, and that I was gonna just solely focus on jiu-jitsu and fighting MMA at that point. And that's kind of what catapulted me into like doing things full time. So it took me a little bit of a while to like really, really start to train 2 to 3 times a day, every day. But like basically right after that fight, I started taking jiu-jitsu serious, really, really seriously. And it's kind of cool because I got my black belt like a year and a half after I decided that. So it was like a really quick transition.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like brown belt, like very shortly after, and then black belt, like it's like super short time, like way faster than somebody probably should get their black belt. But my instructor's crazy. What can I do?
Well, you obviously put the work in.
I've been trying for quite a long time. Yeah, enough work in. So that's what I mean. What can I do? I never asked for my belt. You know what I mean? What am I gonna do? No, I'm good. Okay, I'll be a brown belt forever. You know what I mean? There's this big ceremony, and this guy's gonna give you a belt. Like, what are you gonna do? There's sixth degree when I got my black belt. I can't remember. He's seventh degree now, but Luis Polaris was there. So I was like, what are you gonna do? You know what I mean? This like really famous guy. Like, he's there. Like, what are you gonna do? I competed like a week and 2 days afterwards, and like I competed probably the most I'd ever competed in my entire life that first year at black belt, because I was just terrified that everybody would think I would suck. So I just competed, and for the most part I did suck, but I got better. So
there you go. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters. And you know, I like it. You know, we're friends on Facebook, and this is the first time we're sitting down to have a conversation. And I really like your post because you kind of laid out there that you have that fear of competition, and that you get the nerves, that you deal with that. And I think that's really, what our audience wants to hear, because you know, all they're going through it for maybe the first time, for maybe their first competition. Maybe they're thinking, oh, it's not normal to be nervous. But you say, yes, it absolutely is.
I don't know if
you'll
it's
always be nervous. Yeah. It never goes away.
I don't know if it's as nervous as a common to be as nervous as I get. Because she's not nearly as nervous. She gets nervous,
says,
but I get like...
It's how you internalize it.
I get really bad. This Nogi Worlds was the best one that I did. I've been like training harder, and having better training partners definitely helps. And like getting the other person out of your head is helping a lot. But yeah, I don't think I'll ever stop getting nervous. I think I'll be able to deal with it more. And every once in a while I'm not nervous, and that's when I do the worst. Like
when you're not nervous?
Yeah, if I'm like feeling like, I like to call it flat.
I'm
like,
so
where
the opposite.
I'm not really feeling anything.
Are you really?
I'm not really feeling
yeah.
anything.
If you're
if
amped
I'm
up.
I'm feeling zen, but amped up at the same time. That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's what I need.
How do you get in that state? What do you do to like prepare?
Music really helps me. I don't know. I think some people really respond to music, especially like the music they like, right? And if I just like get myself into kind of like a trance or a zone beforehand with it, and just kind of move with it in the warm-ups, I can get myself into that mindset where I'm, you know, just moving and not thinking.
By
you
warming
know.
Up, she means like jumping around and shaking herself. She does like the zeroest amount of warming up ever. She does more warming up on the side of the mat.
I do. I will say that warming up is really good to do. The times that I have warmed up, I think it's helped a lot. CJ and I warmed up before Pan Ams this year, and I warmed up with Anna Salim, another black belt out of Roberto Travin, before Worlds. And I think it really just helped loosen me up and get into that mind frame, you know, so.
Yeah, don't be one of those people that don't warm up.
Yeah.
One, you can get injured. Like, one of our friends, like, he competed in a cold room, and he didn't really warm up. like rushed onto the mat and he tore like something in his shoulder. So like, yeah, not only is it gonna affect your performance, but really getting that second wind, like your second wind's really your first wind. Your first wind, like the way that your lungs feel before you burn them out and the way your lungs feel after they burn them out is completely, completely different. And I like, part of class is that you get a little tired and then you relax a little bit, then you spar. And if you're not doing that when you're competing, then you're kind of doing yourself a disservice because you're not really treating it like the same mental state you're doing while you're in class. And to me, that's the like main thing that I'm really trying to focus on, is that a competition day is not really that much different than a day in class. Maybe I spend 6 to 8 hours here because that's what I'm going to do on a Saturday at a tournament that I'm not competing in, or that I am competing in. So if I'm not competing on a Saturday, then I need to be in the gym on Saturday from like 8 a.m. or 8:30 a.m., which we do. We teach a Nogi class in Rock Hill. Then I need to come and get my butt out of here for open mat and I try to stay as long as I can for open mat. And then maybe I train a little bit later on Saturday night because maybe I want to do the absolute. And the absolute's always at like 5 or 6 o'clock.
Right.
So if I'm not training to acclimate myself that way, like, I'm not going to really perform the way that I really could. Like, one of the reasons I think I performed well at Nogi Worlds is this was the one time that I trained, like, the day before the tournament, the day before the tournament. Like, I did a decent amount of training while I was in California this time. And I think it really helped me because I was able to just kind of sweat out a little bit of good nerves, the negative part of the nerves, because nerves are good because they keep you sharp. Like, but that like anxiety kind of like almost like battery drained feeling you get sometimes where your mouth kind of tastes all weird and like you're kind of buzzy and you have like a headache because like you're like really anxious and you've been trained, like you haven't really eaten the best all day because you're cutting weight a little bit, you know what I mean?
I mean, people know how to take care of themselves before a competition. Like, what makes you feel good, right? Like, is it going out in nature? Like, I did that with Anna for Worlds and I thought that was fun. Is it watching a good movie? Is it just surrounding yourself with really good people? You gotta think about those things before you compete because it's gonna affect you mentally and that's gonna affect your performance.
Yeah, she likes to chill a little bit more than me.
Definitely.
But like I said, I think like she has a little bit stronger of a mind than I do. I think that she can just be a little bit sharper with like I know I put in the work. I know that there's not that much more I can do. And me, I'm like more of a perfectionist. I'll like just sit and drill till like 9:30 at night before the tournament. Like, oh man, I need to like.
How can you not feel confident?
I need
prepared.
To do that. I need to do this. And it's just that there's so much jujitsu. There's so much jujitsu. Like, I can't say that anything that I can do or anything that I ever do in jujitsu will be perfect. Nothing that I ever do will be perfect. So whether I spend an hour drilling a Barambolo or 4 hours drilling a Barambolo, like, I need to either do that in one day or I'm going to do that in a week. So it's like, how much information can I put in my brain at once, or how much can I improve on certain aspects of my game? And that's like my mind obsession. So for me, I can't really turn it off before I compete, whereas she like goes out chills and like relaxes, she'll read a book. Like me, like you watch me try to read a book, it's like I can't, like reading two sentences and I'm like looking over here. Like,
well, it's always easier to believe in other people than yourself, you know. I think if you believed in yourself the way that the community does and everyone around you, you'd be pretty confident.
It's a fine line, right? Because it's not that I'm unconfident. It's just that I believe in jiu-jitsu so much that I understand that a guy like Cabrini's son is out there and he's training. And he's Cabrini's son. What? Like, he's Cabrini's son, man. What am I going to do to that?
This is true.
If I'm not obsessed with thinking about that. Or DeAndre, who's like my friend to me right now. I love you, D. Like, he's one of my favorite guys in the entire world, but like, I have to beat him. Right? I'm obsessed with him because he's beat me twice right now. And he's beat my brother a couple of times. And he's a fantastic grappler. And having somebody like DeAndre on my mind all the time can keep me sharp. Right? But I can't just think about DeAndre because DeAndre is not the only one. Right? Like, there's a lot of DeAndres out there. And there's only one of me. So, like, I got to be obsessed with trying to be the best version of me. Because if I'm not the best version of me, there's going to be a better version of me somewhere. And they're not me. There's somebody that could be a million times better than me. Or they could be just like me, training at a small school. And maybe they have a little bit more confidence in what they're doing. Or maybe they have a little less confidence. So it's like all this weird, like, mental game that we have to play with ourselves. And she plays it cool the first couple of days, or the last couple of days before a tournament. And I think I'm playing it a lot less cool. I think I'm, like, detailing everything that possibly could happen, where it's like, it's all about what you can do to make your mind at ease.
Yeah.
And that's what makes my mind at ease. It's training all the time. And what makes her mind at ease is training really, like, she's 110%. I'm like a 99.9%. I have like a 0.1% left. If you ask me to do a round, an extra round, usually I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I can do it. But if we're training the way that we train, like, for the tournament, sometimes she can't do that extra round because it's like she's pushed herself so much harder than I've pushed myself throughout the whole process that she's like laying on the floor like dead, like she's cramping or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, she's just pushed herself to the point where it's
like, he doesn't do that.
I definitely do, but it's like, it's like I say, it's like an interesting, like, mental philosophy, because she's a little bit more stubborn and trained. Like, I'm more inclined to open up my game and allow some stuff to happen, where she's more inclined to, like, be like, no, you're not going to do this, I'm going to do this. And if you're not going to do what I want you to do, I'm going to figure out a way to make it. I'm like, well, okay, we'll go this way, or I'll go this way. It doesn't really matter, right? And I think that sometimes, like, it's better to be the way that she is, and I think sometimes it's better to be the way that I am. I think that's what makes our relationship so wonderful,
mm-hmm.
because we really, really help each other. Like,
and I was watching you guys tonight. And I mean, most of the people's rounds are going pretty quick in that passing drill.
Yeah.
You had a couple, Caitlin had a couple really long rounds.
Like, I think, like, I went through the line like four times. Round, right? It was you and Jay for like an hour and 5 minutes.
Yeah. You two first, and then
she's,
I saw you
queen
and Jay.
Of the hill most of the time, man. If you look in and you've gone through the line a couple of times, she's usually still in. Because she really, 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 really doesn't want to give up that position sometimes. And sometimes it's,
I just,
like,
really want to pass your guard.
Yeah. There was no quit. I mean,
but their guards are really good.
They are.
And I'm like, no, but I'll pass it still. So.
But always steadfast and, like, always very calm, you know, because I was watching too, you know, when we were sitting there in line for those of us who weren't staying in, i.e. me and Phil. Yeah, it was great. It was great to watch you guys in similar but different styles.
Yeah,
right.
We've definitely stolen part of each other's games.
Definitely.
Like, and when we first started dating, it was like so
opposite
yin and yang, so yin and yang. And now it's more like if you took a yin yang and kind of just like shook it up a little bit, like there, it's a
exchange.
Lot, yeah, it's a lot
the
more color
exchange.
Blend. Yeah, our games are a lot more blended. In fact, you can start seeing my passing game kind of looking a lot more like her passing game.
Pressure passing.
So yeah, I really enjoy pressure passing a lot more than I used to. In fact, it's not that I used to, it's just like there wasn't something that I ever really thought of, or something that I really thought of that I could do.
Did you really believe in it?
Not so much. Like, and it was maybe some of my teachers weren't so much into pressure passing, or I'd never really seen anybody smaller really pressure pass. And that's kind of cool to watch her, like, over under some guy that's like 200 pounds. So it's hard to not believe in a technique after you watch it applied so many times over and over again. And I've probably studied her over under just by either A, being her dummy, B, watching her, like, do the technique to somebody, or just C, like, just watching as a bystander of her just teaching, right, just seminars and stuff like that. So I become, like, almost, I don't want to say better at the over-under than her, but it's almost like I'm able to now help her with her over-under because I'm doing things differently because my body type is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so now some of my grips, like, she's like, oh, wow, that's a cool grip. Like, and we can do this both ways. right? I'm learning from her, she's learning from me, and then we learn back from each other with, like, the ways that we can exchange, like, how maybe she hips escape a little bit different, right? Or just, like, any real technique you can think about, we can exchange and just live different because we are different body styles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's definitely more of the kind of grind style where I can, now thanks to her, I can play both, which is now, like, the exact opposite for her.
Yeah.
She can start to play both. So
yeah,
it's really
true.
Cool.
I never passed on the outside.
Yeah, now you can start to notice
yeah.
when she's passing to the outside. And now, like, it'll start combining, and maybe one day our games will just look the same.
Who knows? Fusion.
Yeah.
Into a better jiu-jitsu.
That's all
it'll be a small glow
yeah.
around both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I had, like, no guard before I
met. But then you
CJ.
Add Josh into the mix, and it's like, oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Even I think they have different styles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've definitely learned different things from both of them. That's helped my game out a lot.
That's awesome to have. Yeah.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have the collective of information that we have. Very lucky.
So, Caitlin, if you were to say, this is whenever I was on my BJJ campaign, and you still are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's whenever I was white, blue, purple, whatever belt rank, I wish I wouldn't have spent that much time doing this.
Mm-hmm.
What would this be?
Like a technique, you mean?
Like just any training habit. Like, what did you feel like you gave up time and said, that was kind of useless in my training? Or if the answer is absolutely nothing, that's great.
Taking breaks from training regularly.
Yeah.
You know, I started just over the summers when I visit my dad in Florida.
Sure. He's, your dad is also black belt, right?
Yeah, Joshua Miller out of Terra Planis Jiu-Jitsu in Augusta, Georgia. And we started with Eduardo de Lima from Gracie Baja. And he's under Carlinhos, but this was like, I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And it was out of his garage.
Wow.
There was no jiu-jitsu back then, you know? Like, I'm 30 now, you know? And
yeah.
I didn't start training regularly with my dad because I moved in with him when I was 15, and that's when I started being regular. And then I went to college. I think I had just gotten my purple belt, and I think I had stopped training, like, maybe 6 months or so, and after that, there had been, like, maybe 1 to 2 more times that I had taken a break like that. And I feel like, you know, I got my black belt when I was 26, but I started training regularly when I was 15, and there's just habits I would have done when I was in college. I think I went to Nogi Pan Ams as a purple belt in my early 20s, and, you know, smoke cigarettes sometimes, you know, like, come on, you can't do that and expect to win, you know. Like, I was a dumb college student, and don't waste your time when you're young taking breaks or, like, getting caught up in whatever you want to call it, like, just getting just distracted by things that aren't going to serve you in the long run, not only for your jiu-jitsu but your life, you know. Like, don't waste the time you have now. Soak up as much jiu-jitsu as you can. You know, and don't, if you need to take a break from jiu-jitsu because you burn out or you're injured, that's cool, but, you know, don't take too long.
Yeah, I mean, take a day or two.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, take
yeah,
a day or
yeah.
two and then,
like,
come back. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. But don't take too long, you know.
That's really interesting. That's very interesting, you know. I was looking for more technique or like something that you'd concentrated on for like 3 or 4 months, and that was
that's the difference
a way better
of,
answer.
Of training for 15 years or longer.
18,
you know?
I guess, if you count when I was 12. But
versus a year or two.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, I think our like off the mat habits are almost more important than your on the mat habits when you're a lower belt. Because when you're a lower belt, like, and you're at the right school. Because there are a lot of wrong schools nowadays. But if you're at the right school in the right environment, then your instructor should be able to build you up. So it's not so much your habits that you're doing on the mat, because he should be correcting your habits. He should be helping you, guiding you, doing what you need to. But it's more like what you're doing off the mat. Like, just your everyday habits, who you hang out with. Do you have negative friends or do you have positive friends? Do you have friends that like to party? Do you have friends that like to do things that maybe they shouldn't do? So it's all about, like, that's because that's where my problems were when I was a lower belt. Like, I had bad friends, and I was wrong. Like, most people don't know this, and I don't think I've actually publicly said this a lot, but I was actually on probation when I was maybe 18 or 19 for doing some stuff that I shouldn't have done. So I wasn't necessarily the greatest kid. And I think just believing in jiu-jitsu a little bit more at the start would have really helped me, I think. But at the same time, everybody learns in different kind of ways. And sometimes I think you need to get choked to know not where to put your neck. And I think that happens in life sometimes. So
yeah.
As long as you try to better yourself just a little bit every single day and you don't try to take too big of steps, I think that if you're at the right school, that you really shouldn't need to do anything on the mat. And it's all about just kind of your relationships with life, I guess, outside of the mats. Because if you're doing the right things on the mats, I think it'll help balance it out. But you have to be on the mats in order for it to balance. If it's like one day you're training, one day you're not, one day you're training, one day you're not. Which when you're a teenager, like we were, can be very, very, sporadic, or, sometimes,
we're lazy and distracted.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes, you want to hang out with your friends, or, you want to go to the movies, or
purple
whatever.
Purple belt teenager, yeah. We think we know it all.
Yeah, exactly. And when I was a blue belt, man, I had it bad.
Me too.
I thought I was, the world's best blue belt, so I didn't need to do anything. I trained, because when I did train, we trained really hard, really hard. I didn't think at blue belt than anybody trained as hard as we did. So that mental confidence is something, but it's also a trick myself. You know what I mean? Because there were a lot of people training that hard. I just was ignorant because at blue belt in 2008, it was really easy to be ignorant. But in 2019, it's very difficult. YouTube,
yeah.
Everything is out in the open. So if you aren't on your game nowadays, man, it's very, 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 very hard for you to fake it. You know what I mean? Because all you gotta do is look on the internet and you can see somebody training. In fact, does anybody not train and post a picture anymore? Right? You can see basically anybody's entire life on the internet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can see that Cabrina's son's with Cabrina all day long at the gym. And if I'm not at the gym all day long, I don't have a dad that's gonna tell me, okay, come on, we're gonna do this and it's gonna make you a world champion. You know what I mean? I have a girlfriend, I have a brother. And that's what we do for each other. I got coaches here, and that's what they do for me. So we're very lucky for where we ended up. And I think part of our journey led us here. So it was we got everything that we needed on the outside. Now we're where we need to be. Competition school is going to help us with our competition goals. But at first, it can't be all about competition. You need to let jiu-jitsu become a part of your life and help balance some of the stuff that needs to be balanced out. Because I think that it's the most positive thing that you can do. In fact, I think I saw it on Facebook today that Jocko, Jocko said it's the most positive thing that you can do with your life. And I believed that long, long before because, I did it for myself. And I know Kaylin feels very similar. Watch my brother do the same thing. So, man, it's that whole, jiu-jitsu saves me, phrase. It really does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like anything else. You can let religion save you. You can let, cookies save you if you really want. Whatever you want. Whatever you choose to do, just do it with, a passion. Do it with something, and if it's benefiting your life in a positive way, do it more.
You can never go wrong by being in jiu-jitsu. The easiest way to get better at it is just by being there as much as you can and absorbing as much information as you can.
And don't be afraid to train with other people. If you go to one school your whole life, you're going to have this weird idea of what jiu-jitsu is. So just expand your knowledge. If you're in a small area where there's only one school, you do what you can. But if you're in an area where there's a lot of different schools, but if those schools don't really talk to each other, that can be a problem. Find a school that's very neutral. Because I think that the schools that don't really talk to each other, I don't understand where you're trying to hide secrets from. There shouldn't be really any secrets in jiu-jitsu nowadays. I understand it, but I don't understand it. Teams are teams, but man, I think we're all on the same team for Team Jiu-Jitsu, right? Let's not let our students go to karate. or go basketball, or go play football, CrossFit, do whatever. Like, if you have somebody that's going to choose another sport over jiu-jitsu, like, that's not the goal of me as a jiu-jitsu. I want everybody in the world to do jiu-jitsu, and I want everybody in the world to love jiu-jitsu as much as I do. Because, like I said, it will benefit you.
Yeah, I think that's super important to train elsewhere, and our professor John Plowler's in full support of that. You know, I go all over for my job. I go over Virginia and North Carolina, and I train all over, and it's just phenomenal. We'll have the
Pedro Sowers
and train with
different
them.
Styles.
Yeah. Go to Revolution BJJ in Richmond and train with them. Go to, you know, all the different schools. I think it's very beneficial to see that.
It's really important for you, because sometimes we think a certain way is the way it has to be. And we're grown up the whole way just being shown this one little piece. And then somebody someday shows you it just a little bit different. And you might like it a little bit different, but you'll never know, because you just stay in your own little box and you just live in your own little world. And I mean, if that's what you want to do, like, I guess what it really comes down to is, what are your goals? And if you have goals in jiu-jitsu, then you need to find ways to strive for those goals. But if your goal is just to do jiu-jitsu, just do jiu-jitsu. Be happy that you come to class and that you are bettering yourself. Because as long as you're coming to jiu-jitsu once, twice, three times, four times, five times a week, it doesn't matter. You come to jiu-jitsu, jiu-jitsu is always going to be here. It's never going to go away. And you never really quit until you decide to never do it again. And when can you really decide to never do it again? Because you're going to wake up tomorrow and jiu-jitsu is going to be there. You're going to wake up the next day and jiu-jitsu is going to be there. You're going to wake up the following day, and jiu-jitsu is always going to be there. So maybe one day you wake up and you want to put dust off that old blue belt again, right? Because it took you so long to get your blue belt, you feel like you'll never, ever, ever get another belt again, so you quit, right? It happens. So just lucky it didn't happen to us.
Yeah.
Because probably at one point I felt like I was never going to do jiu-jitsu again. So I think it's easy to feel like that way when you take a break. Especially if you take a break for an injury. Like, I got hurt from training for my first MMA fight. I had to take a decent amount of time off, like 6 to 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah, luckily.
That is a long time.
I had moved to a different city. Luckily, a Cabrini affiliate at the time popped up, and I knew who Cabrini was, and I got really excited over jiu-jitsu again. I got really excited. But it was something that I probably hadn't thought about for, like, a couple months.
That's crazy.
So I like had a girlfriend at the time, was doing that. I was injured, so I couldn't do anything anyways. Just kind of living that like not so good lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And man, that not so good lifestyle feels good. It's easy to do that. It's way easier to live a negative lifestyle than it is to live a positive lifestyle.
Yeah.
You have to wake up and do stuff. Like, I have to wake up, get out of my bed, and be positive. Like, man, that's so much harder than just laying in bed, looking on the phone, like, and just being negative. Like, I think jiu-jitsu is really, really hard. But doing stuff that is hard makes your life better. Because easy things aren't necessarily, like, the right things.
Agreed.
Yeah. That's why McDonald's tastes terrible.
So, CJ, you spent what, about a year in Brazil?
So, actually, she spent a whole year in Brazil when she was in high school.
You did?
I only spent 6 months.
Did you train there?
Yeah. I did, in Sorocaba. It's a little city in the state of São Paulo, about an hour away from the capital. I was 17 when I went, and I stayed till I was 18 for a year, because I had a friend in school when I was living with my dad.
Were you in exchange?
Yeah. He was like, awesome. Oh, you can do this if you want
to.
Because I had a friend who was from Costa Rica, and I was like, man, it must be so cool going to another country. My dad was like, if you research it, and figure all the logistics out, I'll fund the bill for it, and I got to go.
It's awesome.
It was awesome. I knew high school Spanish and no Portuguese. But I think about 6 months in, I was fine, because the guys that I trained with did not know any English at all.
So they really taught me.
Because I would go after school to the day class, and then I would go home or to my host family, eat lunch, and take a nap, and then train at night.
Wow.
Yeah.
And who did you train with whenever you were down there?
It was a small school. My friend Emerson Gago Martins he runs his school still out of Sotocaba. But, you know, I got to tell you, like, they train hard and they train like anywhere else.
Yep.
There's good jiu-jitsu everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's jiu-jitsu. And nowadays, everywhere. Everywhere. I don't think there's a continent. Like, maybe Antarctica did not have jiu-jitsu. But maybe some, or maybe, I don't know.
Some of the explorers, they might be putting mats down there. Who knows?
Yeah. Jiu-jitsu
people are crazy.
Yeah.
My friend was a purple belt at the time, trained at the same school as me, Anderson Adam. He's a black belt with his own school now, and I see he's been winning a lot of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. The São Paulo Open, Brasileiro, so yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see the people that I train with down there progressing still.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And that had to be, especially at that young age, it teaches you, I think travel teaches you sometimes more than the school itself does.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it really does. I wouldn't trade that experience for anything.
How's your Portuguese now?
I think my Portuguese has definitely suffered since then, but like being in jiu-jitsu like kind of entraps you into forever maintaining your Portuguese. So we'll try to talk Portuguese to each other.
She speaks way better than me. I speak like broken favela Portuguese.
It's like sometimes I'll be like, "What are you trying to say to me?" Because they'll be trying to secretly.
Had the year over there instead of just the 6 months. Yeah. You might have had better Portuguese.
Yeah. I probably would have, man. Yeah, I would have got trapped there though. If I would have stayed there another 6 months, y'all would have never seen me ever again. I loved Brazil, man. I loved Brazil. Yeah. The only reason I came back is because I ran out of money. That was it. And I was too afraid.
It's an easy place to fall in love with.
Yeah, I was just too afraid to, like, be there without any money. But if I didn't come back, I wouldn't have met her. So I like to say that I came back to meet her. So we'll go back together one day.
Yeah.
Julie, you have anything else?
I think that was it. That was a really fun class. Cool. I've been working on guard passing a lot because I'm terrible at it. So I'm happy that was the focus.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Guys. We got new drills out of it. We're really, really stoked about taking that back. So thank you for that. Awesome. Probably won't be our last time training.
Awesome, man. We'd love to have you guys next time.
But if people want to find out more about you, tell us, Caitlin, how to find you. I see your Instagram page because I see your women's classes, Friday women's classes all the time. Which is always on there, so tell them how to...
I'm on Instagram as Caitlin Huggins, BJJ. Caitlin spelled C-A-I-T-L-I-N, Huggins, H-U-G-G-I-N-S. You can find me on Facebook, too. I have an athlete page, and I know CJ does as well.
Yeah, I guess that's what the cool thing to do is, right? Now Instagram, like, kind of makes it for you, right? You can make your Instagram an athlete page and be even cooler now. Right, so we got one of those, and it made me an athlete page on Facebook. Yeah. But yeah, my Instagram is HLDURGRND. You can find me on Facebook. My athlete page is really small, so give it a like. And maybe I'll be able to beat Miss Kaylin's athlete page.
Maybe. But my one's pretty meager as well.
Just thank you guys. We really appreciate it. Yeah. And if you've never tried jiu-jitsu, you should try it. And if you have kids, your kids should do jiu-jitsu as well.
Absolutely. And the ladies. All the ladies. Yeah.
Every 100%. Lady in the world should know jiu-jitsu.
100%. Yeah. And if you want to support the BJJ Campaign podcast, Phil's got the shirts up for sale on the website now. BJJCampaignPodcast.com. We also, man, they've been hitting us up hard on that Instagram film.
Yeah, we're big time. It's like 20-30 followers.
20-30 followers already, man. Yeah. He just created it the other day. It's blowing up.
Good job.
We're not blowing up. But we do have to take a picture afterwards for the Instagram.
Yeah, we forgot
for
that.
Sure.
And all you out there, like they said, if you're not doing jiu-jitsu, get out there and do jiu-jitsu. If you're taking a break, you're listening to this podcast, don't just listen to this podcast. Go out and do it. Get better. Be better.
I tell you what. If you send me a message and you are a blue belt that hasn't trained in over 3 months, I will give you a free private lesson. All you gotta do is be the first person to message me, and you have to have been on a break.
Yes. You heard it here, folks. BJJ Campaign bringing you value. So anyway... thank you guys very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And we are out.
Puss.
Puss.
I'm about to feed them to the sharks right now.
Get them hyped right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is on.
Yeah.
Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it goes.
Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth. That's time on the mat, we put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know. But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.